RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the May 29th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined momentarily by my co-host here on the podcast, Daniel Galvan. Come up here on this week's edition of the show. I'm going to have four interviews for you. You're going to hear my conversations with Calvin Kattar, who fights next week at UFC 238, Shamrock FC CEO Jesse Finney, to discuss all things going on with his promotion. Bobby Lee will come on the show to preview his fight on Friday at LFA 68, and also have a conversation with the amateur fighter Parker Wadman, who fights next week at Valor Fighting Challenge 60. We're going to recap PFL from last week, preview UFC Stockholm, talk about some of the latest news and notes going on in MMA, what happened last week at the Nevada State Athletic Commission hearing, Yoel Romero being awarded $27 million against a supplement company. We're going to draft our rival UFC promotion. Of course, if you listen to last week's podcast, me and Daniel gave our top five most valuable non-UFC fighters. So this is part two of kind of a little series we're doing here. And momentarily, we're going to talk about some of the releases that the UFC has made. So Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
Jason, I'm doing quite well. To me, I think I am looking forward to the summer. Down here in Texas, I think it's going to be roughly 200 degrees Fahrenheit. So definitely looking forward to it, Jason. But it was so weird going a weekend without a UFC event. I didn't know what to do. I just sat in front of my computer and stared at it for 6 hours just out of habit. But it was weird not to invest 6 hours on a UFC card this past weekend. I watched a little PFL action earlier in the week, and I tell you what, that main card was tough to get through. But yeah, we're back to the swing of things with the UFC in Sweden.
Yeah, man, it's PFL hit 5 of 6 fights on the main card going the distance. But yeah, for me, it was at the bar. We started having DJs there on Friday and Saturday night, so that's that was pretty much my weekend getting back into the whole promoting DJs at a bar / club. So that was fun. Always good people watching, very, very good people watching. When you're the sober person and you're seeing people who've had some cocktails and they're on the dance floor, it's good people watching.
Are you jamming out to the DJ? Because I feel like that's a little. I mean, you're an adult now. Is basically what I'm saying. Like I'm still like I'm in my 20s, but I'm definitely not an adult. You know, are you jamming out to Old Town Road? Like what songs are they playing? Are you someone who books DJs to your personal taste, but they're playing Bruce Springsteen? And
No. It's, I mean, look, when I'm in the car and I'm listening to music, my range of music is pretty wide, you know, pop, R&B, I don't really do country. It's just kind of not my thing.
Yeah, you like good music.
But look, when it comes to us, and this is what I tell our DJs when they come in, I just say, play the crowd. Whatever that crowd is, you play that crowd, that crowd hits, and our DJs did a great job this weekend of just playing to that crowd. And, obviously a weekend crowd on the beach is a little bit of a different crowd. But, yeah, man, I had a good weekend. Sunday was just kind of, really, I didn't do much on Sunday. I kind of just sat on the couch on weekend. And but, yeah, man, it's good to get back in the swing of things. Of course, I want to say it was Friday when the news that the UFC released Justin Willis came out, and maybe it was Saturday when Elias Theodoro, and then I want to say it was yesterday or maybe the day before when news of Brian Caraway no longer with the UFC. And, when it comes to, I tweeted with the Justin Willis one, not shocking. I think that the weird part about all that is the fact that he had recently signed a new deal with the UFC. And last week on the podcast, I had played a conversation I had with Walt Harris where Walt mentioned that, he really wanted that fight, with Justin Willis. Justin Willis turns it down and ultimately the UFC decides, well, we don't want to be in your business anymore. Justin is, he's charismatic. I mean, I thought his personality started to kind of come out a little bit in the lead up to his last fight, but he has a fighting style that the UFC's just not in love with. And Elias Theodoro, I think, is another example of this. And You know, yes, this is a sport, Daniel, but this is entertainment. And I'm not shocked the UFC parted ways with Elias Theodora and Justin Willis.
Well, I'm not shocked either because it's kind of a trend in the UFC. But I will say I wouldn't have made this move if I'm the UFC. And I understand you look at Willis and Theodora and you say, not super exciting. For Brian Caraway, I think he's a bit more of an entertaining fighter than the other two, a tad bit more. He's had some pretty interesting fights, some good contests. But when I do look at this, look, when you have a huge roster, not everyone is going to go out there and beat Cowboy Cerrone. Mm-hmm. And I know you're going to have guys looking to prove themselves and make them hungry, and maybe that's the message you want to send. But the ratings of the UFC kind of aren't gigantic when it's just a card full of great fights. They're pretty similar to a card that has a good fight, a bad fight, good fight, bad fight. So it's really the name of the sport is based on knowing the fighters and caring about their stories. Are they stars, etc.? So I think when I see these guys get cut, I feel like the primary focus of the UFC is short-sighted in that. To me, the big story here is you look at a guy like Elias Theodora, who I think he sticks out of the three, not because of talent level, but because of like possibility to get over as a quote-unquote star or a relatively named fighter because of his personality and his look. And that stuck out since he was on The Ultimate Fighter. And it is something where I feel as though if Elias Theodora came up in the UFC during the Spike era, where it felt like they had a laundry list of fighters that casual fans were very aware of, I do think Theodora would have had more value to the UFC. I do think they would have done a better job of marketing him. And to me, the story here, when I look at these cuts, is the UFC just is unable, whether it be due to the quantity of the shows or the quality of their marketing skills, unable to communicate their mid-card stars to the casual fan, and the casual fan just doesn't know who they are. Because a guy like Elias Theodoro in the year 2008, I think would have meant a lot more to the casual fan than he did now as he got released.
The one thing I will say about the reaction from, I would say, the way the media reacted to this in comparison to the fans, I thought there were some big differences. I think for the most part, I think for the fans were simply like, you know, hey, not really a big deal. Elias and Justin were not exactly fighters that ultimately drew me to the television set. I think the reason that from the media side that the reaction to the Elias cut was more than a Justin Willis cut was simply because the media loved Elias Theodoro. You know, he was a guy that was very media friendly. You know, he was a guy that I would conversate with on social media. And you see this in sports where when the media likes somebody, you know, they're going to kind of, you know, come to their defense when something like this happens. Where you know, Justin Willis, I don't, you know, my perception of the matter is I don't think that, you know, he was. Yeah, I think media was kind of indifferent to him. But I think that the reason you've seen the reaction from the media on Theodoro is more just based on the fact of they like him. And in a way, it's kind of personal that the UFC moved away from it. But I don't blame the UFC in making this move because, and I think it, when you look at the timing of these cuts, I think a lot of the reasons for this, just my personal belief here, is the fact that the Contender Series is starting up here in a couple weeks, and the UFC is going to be signing fighters off the Contender Series, and they need to make room for them on the roster.
Yeah, that's a good point you bring up, because when you have a series of cuts, they don't do it willy-nilly. They're not just like, all right, on late May, let's do this. There's a reason, and you put two and two together, you get four, and that's probably why the Contender Series. Look, I mean, these guys were all incredibly talented, potentially top 15 guys in their divisions. You know, Justin Willis, 4-1 in the UFC. His only loss was his last fight, a loss to Curtis Blaydes. Elias Theodoro, he's got a win over Eric Anders and Sam Alvey, and he's never lost back-to-back fights. And Brian Caraway, you know, wins over Aljamain Sterling, Eddie Wineland, back-to-back losses to Pedro Munoz and Cody Stamen. The Aljamain Sterling fight was pretty close, though. But these guys are all talented, and I do get the point you're getting across. But I will say, as we look toward at the, you know, at the end of our show, we're going to preview UFC Stockholm. And this card does not have my interest at all. I mean, I'm looking forward to Alexander Gustafsson fighting Ozdemir Latifi, whatever. Manuel Rakic, okay. But this card is weak. There are a lot of fighters on here who I think don't bring me to the TV set. And I'm not saying Elias and Justin Willis and Caraway do either. But I do think if they were on this card or on so many of these cards that we look at and we're like, these are three fight cards, they would add more validation and quality to it. And when you have so many cards, so many fighters, I think when you cut top 15 fighters in your weight class, even if they aren't that exciting, it's just a negative. Because the thing is, the most important – one of the important thing for a UFC to not forget, and they've forgotten, and I do think this is a big reason why their business is down, is – it's not the most obvious thing. The most obvious thing is you want to put on great entertaining fights. You want to put on Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner. That's the obvious thing. That gets people glued on. The people love face punching. But the second thing that the UFC must never forget, and they have, is that one of the most important things that they can do is protect the sport, protect wins and losses. When it comes to drawing big time buy rates, it's all about the pizzazz and the show, the Conor McGregors, etc. Those guys, the Brock Lesnars, the big superstars. But the thing that brings you to the dance is creating this system where you are selling to the fans, I think personally, that you are selling to the fans, these are the best fighters in the world, and no questions asked, this guy, this welterweight champion, he's the best welterweight in the world. The lightweight champion, he's the best lightweight in the world. And over time, with the influx of guys getting title shots because they have a bigger name value, the influx of interim title fights, and little things like this where you cut talented fighters, you begin to erode at the trust and investment you've built in the viewer. And that trust and investment is you want the viewer to believe you are watching the best fighters and it's a sport where wins and losses matter. And that's a long-term thing where if you erode that, that's where I think your business begins to fall apart, because then your cards start to mean less.
But here's and the thing that's going to hurt, and this is every fighter. You got to go back 4 years to find the last time Elias Theodora won a fight by stoppage.
That's true. Absolutely.
Eight straight decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the honest realization of what. In terms of what MMA is, I mean, and I don't think this is a UFC thing. I think if this was a Bellator situation, they wouldn't be happy with it. You know, so, like, I understand where people are upset saying, hey, this is a guy who's 8-3 in the UFC. He's 4-1 or 3-1 in his last four fights of understanding. But I more come from it saying, I understand why the UFC made this decision. I mean, you know what you have in Elias Theodoro. And you know what? You look at the fight against Brunson and you even look at the fight against Eric Anders. They just weren't fun, exciting fights to watch. And so to me, I just understand the decision. And it doesn't, it doesn't really affect me either way.
Yeah, I just think this is a long-term thing. You look at his fights, they aren't great, and they're not finishes. And you take him off a UFC card, and in the short term, it's not entertaining. But I'm just saying, I like a promotion to protect the sport aspect and protect the – we have the best fighters. We have the top 15 guys in the world. And when you eliminate that, when you take that away because they're not exciting, I just think that's a short-term win with a long-term loss. Just because I do think having the best possible roster, which from a sporting standpoint is important. This is an entertainment business, but I say this as a pro wrestling fan. Look at issues in professional wrestling. It's when wins and losses don't matter. It's when the sporting aspect is taken away, because the thing is, like, the viewer wants a logic. They want guys who win to climb up the stairs, and they want to know they're beating the best guys. So that's just why when I look at these types of cuts, and we see it a lot in the UFC, where guys who are not entertaining, or even Bellator, guys who aren't entertaining, well, we're not going to renew your deal, or we're going to cut you. I get it, but my point of view is just I think it's okay to bite the pill, keep them on your roster, and figure out how to market them. Obviously, you don't want a roster full of Elias Theodoros, but I think it's worth having, especially a guy like Elias, who out of those three, he sticks out the most of a guy who could be marketed to still bring eyeballs to your product based on what he does outside of the cage.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting. I mean, 185 is a rather thin division for Bellator. Maybe they want to bring him into the promotion. I can see Justin Willis being in Bellator at some point. Of course, Brian Caraway is going to be fighting over in Macau later on this year. Also, speaking of Macau, Will Brooks is going to be fighting over there. He's going to be fighting Abel Trujillo. That's going to be at the end of July. So, we'll see what happens there, Daniel. But, I think the overall sense for me is just I'm not really surprised by this. But, look, the clear is the message is being sent. I mean, the message is sent here. Look, we want entertaining fights. And, I mean, yes, you mentioned a great point. Not everyone is Donald Cerrone, and we'll just have to see what is going to happen. But right now I'm going to get into the interview portion of this week's edition of the podcast. First, you're going to hear my conversation with Calvin Kattar. Then it'll be Jesse Finney. Bobby Lee will be after Jesse. Then the final interview will be with Parker Wadman. And then after that, we're going to draft a rival UFC promotion, recap PFL, preview UFC Stockholm, and talk about some of the latest news in MMA. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man's got a fight coming up here. UFC 238, another big opportunity for him. Calvin Kattar, brand new UFC contract as well. Calvin, I appreciate the time, man. I know I had a chance to catch your podcast you did with Tyson Chardy a couple weeks ago that had a lot of great stories that you talked about in that one. But, part of that was you got a new deal with the UFC. And another big opportunity here, man. But it's been some time since we've seen you in competition. What's these past couple months been like for you?
It's been like me trying to get some damn fights. Just hasn't fallen through yet. You know, nothing came to fruition. So just been training, staying busy, and now I'm just training hard. Me and my teammate Rob Font, he's got a fight coming up 2 weeks after me. We've just been grinding and taking every opportunity we can get.
Ed was telling me because of the two fight camps that you and Rob have going on, you really haven't been able to hit the golf links together.
No, man, we ain't screwing around this time. We're working hard. Not that we screw on it ever, but sometimes we like to get on the links, clear the mind a little bit. But there'll be plenty of time to golf this summer. So we're putting it on hold for right now. But after this summer, I plan to be a scratch golfer.
And one of the things I mentioned about that the podcast on Tyson's podcast, and I think one of the maybe more fascinating things people don't understand is how many miles you put on your car a week going from the various places. And I think people think because 500 miles is kind of what Tyson estimated it as. I mean, is that pretty accurate of how many miles you put on your car going from one place to another to get the training in?
Yeah, man, it's no joke, but I try not to think about the miles just like I do the training and the amount of sets I got to do at the gym. I don't think about it. I keep my head down. I get the work in, and I just let the miles add up. Same thing in training camp, but it's a little ridiculous, man. I just got a new car and putting a lot of miles on it, but I consider that thing like buying a house for me because I stay in the car on the way to the gyms. And so, we're over here in New England where it's not all one-stop shop for the best training around, so you got to go find the quality work wherever it is, and just throw in a good audio book, hit the road, and save the music for the gym when I need that punch.
When you're in the car, is the mind completely off the fight game? I mean, are you not even thinking about it, or is it kind of your way to really kind of really get in the mental side of the game of thinking about, okay, this is what we're going to work on today in terms of what your opponent does well?
Depends. If I'm in the driver's seat, I'm listening to some audio book, having a coffee, being a basic bitch, just listening to some good stuff, and I really enjoy it, man, because it's kind of like a little bit of me time, listening to something I want to listen to. And, all that driving, if you're listening to pointless shit, then it's kind of a waste of time. But if you give yourself something good to listen to, it could, count as being constructive, and worthwhile. But if I'm in the passenger seat, yeah, I might be on Instagram, maybe getting lost in either some donuts on Instagram or maybe some new training techniques that I'm seeing. I'm all over the place if I'm in the passenger seat, but if I'm driving, I'm usually pretty regimented and enjoying a good podcast or audiobook.
Is there a certain type of audiobook that you you know, find yourself gravitating towards?
Yeah, a lot of things having to do with like either athletes or I've been liking this one. It has to do with sports and business. It's called Shoe Dog with Phil Knight, the guy who started Nike. Mm-hmm. Yep. And just, you know, it helps me kind of bridge the connection of, you know, because we got the Combat Zone show 8/23, August 23rd. And, you know, that with the business comes a lot of struggles running the business as well. So I like to hear successful companies and just the shit they went through on their way to the top as well as athletes on their route to, you know, the rise to the top. So things like that usually I gravitate towards, but I'm almost finished up this one and I'm due for some new suggestions. So we'll see.
But you got Ricardo Lamas here, obviously a well-known name in this game. You know, he's been at the top of the UFC and, you know, trying to work his way back there. When you and your team started kind of, you know, piecing together what you expect this fight to be, was there something that stuck out to you about Ricardo that maybe was surprising?
Not surprising. He's just got a number next to his name. It's higher than mine, and I want to take his spot, if not, you know, climb even higher. So I'm down to fight anybody in the top 15. At this point in the game, I don't pick fights. You know what I mean? I'd like to fight anybody above me. I like to try to fight up because I don't want to, you know, I want to gain something from the fight. I want to get to the top. If there's a guy above me, that'll be one step closer. But at the end of the day, we were fortunate enough to get that and then name it a game fighter like Ricardo Lamas in his home court. So backyard, I'm excited about that, man. I've always been, you know, getting cheered locally, you know, enough. And half those guys probably want to see me lose too, coming out paying tickets to see me fight. But I'm excited to go in someone's backyard, gain some fans that night, put on a hell of a show. He's a tough kid. He seems like a classy guy, class act. And should be a good fight, man. I'm excited. Fight up. Always fight up.
Is it just more about, hey, I'm just looking for a guy with a number? That's all my mentality is.
Yeah, man. And where I'm at right now, I think I'm 15. And I don't feel like I earned that spot until I beat a guy with a number next to his name. You know, I want to be in the top 15, but I feel like you only deserve that once you take out a number in the top 15. And I guess where Burgo's at, like 13 or 14, I guess that kind of makes me in that ballpark anyway. But I want a fresh name in the top 15, a respectable name like Ricardo Lamas, who's fought, you know, the best of the best, world champs. And it's a great test, man. This is why I'm in this shit. See where I stack up in the division amongst the best.
You know, obviously 145, we got, you know, a title fight was just announced with Holloway and Edgar. Volkanovski is obviously waiting in the wings at some point. What's kind of your view of where, you know, the featherweight division is right now and kind of, you know, maybe how quick that road can be for you to get in title contention?
Yeah, as I said, I'm 15, but that doesn't mean I got to be 15 guys to get there. It's just a couple fights, and, you know, that's motivating to me, and I think there's a lot of movement in the weight class. So it's definitely motivating for me to see people jumping up in the ranks. Two of the guys in the top 15 I already fought. You know, it's starting to become it's just – I'm getting more familiar with the names in this top 15 and seeing where I stack up in them. And I think there's no reason why, you know, I can't get to the top in time. Just got to buckle down, take the right fights, and just show why I belong, man. Just do what I do. Just do what got me here. Not change shit up. Do what got me here. Continue to put on exciting fights, which I don't know how to fight otherwise. You know, I like to bring a fight. Ricardo, they call him the bully. You know, I ain't been bullied a day in my life, so I'm excited to see, you know, how that works out for him.
Will this be your first trip to Chicago?
It will be. And I'm really excited about that, man. I always wanted to go for St. Paddy's Day where they make the river green. I think it's really cool. My brother's gone out there for that. He's a big fan. Everybody that I've ever heard of that's been to Chicago said nothing but great things. I got to go out there, get me a deep dish. And I hear something about these cake shakes they got where it's just a piece of cake on top of a shake. And sounds right up my alley.
I've never heard of that, but that sounds delicious.
I mean, shit. Sign me up.
Yeah, I know Tyson's a big fan of pizza, so is he's going to wait till after the fight's over, right?
Yeah, you ain't kidding. He's a big fan of pizza. He's got a horrible appetite, but it's in proportion. Like, I eat just way out of portion, and it's probably most of it good, but after the fights, when I want to dig, you know, when I want to dig down, I'm more like that Holloway, and I get my cupcake fix, and I just go on and on. But yeah, it'd be good to go out there. I got a lot of people coming. I think we, like, my family's got like 3 suites out there. So as much as I think I'll be hearing a lot of boos, I'll probably be hearing them too. They get pretty loud, man. And I like that they'll be in the suites. This way, they don't mix with the everyday Chicago fan out there, and some shit gets off, because you know how us Boston guys get.
The Catermania crew is going to be in full full effect.
You see it. You're damn right.
Oh, I love the shirts. You mentioned about Combat Zone. Of course, we've talked about it, as that's your promotion. You mentioned August. Well, you know, any fights you got lined up already for that card?
No, but I'm happy. I got a new matchmaker, Jerome Bashirs. He's killing it, helping out a ton while I'm able to focus on the fight. And really, just always trying to tighten up on the team. I think I'm very fortunate enough to have a great team, not only with the fighting, but now with the promotion side, and it really allows me to be successful in what I'm doing. And so it's still a little early on the matchups for the card, but I got a lot of names that are throwing their names in the hat. So it should be a great event. But I'm excited about both, man. It should be plenty of time after the June 8th fight to, you know, be able to help out, focus in, and help out with that card and make sure it's successful.
I know you mentioned on Tyson's show about, you know, not just having MMA matches, but also kind of looking at other forms of martial arts. Is that something you're going to do with your next show?
Yeah, so we've been incorporating some jiu-jitsu now, gi, no gi, and we've added in the kickboxing and like K1 style kickboxing, more Muay Thai. It's a little bit of both, the K1 style. So we're really just trying to open our doors to all comers and just put on exciting fights. I had all MMA, but what was happening was I was getting all these independent guys that are fighting out of their garage. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to see that shit. No one really wants to see that shit. You know, these guys got upside down ass records saying they're fighting out of the, you know, really whatever gym it is. I mean, they say their last name and throw a team in front of it. And you know what I mean? No one wants to see that shit. And a lot of times what happens is when I was matchmaking, it was stressful for me, you know, because they're unreliable a lot of the times, these guys. And no fighter wants to fight these easy fights a lot of times, but what happens is they want a reliable, easy fight. Kind of don't really make sense. You know what I mean? The more reliable of a fighter you're going to get, the more they come from a good gym, and that makes sure medicals are in and things like that, which is important. So it's a little bit of balance of both, but at the end of the day, things I'm most excited about is that's where I got my start, was for Combat Zone. So each and every event I get to see, you know, my upbringing, where I came from, and I have fought 9 times at Combat Zone. I'm 9-0. That's my home court. Everything about it, I love the history of it. It's been around forever. One of the longest lasting promotions in New England. A lot of top name guys like Joe Lazon, Marcus Davis, Doomsday Howard, John Howard. You know, big names, man. A lot of history with Combat Zone. So I feel like we're carrying the torch, and I'm proud to do so.
And, of course, up first here is UFC 238 coming up next Saturday night, June the 8th in Chicago. Of course, live on pay-per-view, ESPN+. Calvin, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know everything. Follow you on social media. And, of course, the sponsors that are helping you out.
Yeah, it's Calvin Cater. You can find me on all forms of social media. I'm probably, if I'm in the passenger seat, I'll probably be messaging back quicker than ever. But, yeah, shout out to Box Raw, Eat Clean Bro, and all my other sponsors. Yeah, thank you, and look forward to June 8th. Man, you guys don't want to tune in. It's gonna be a badass fight.
Back on the program is the man that runs Shamrock FC, Jesse Finney. Jesse, as always, appreciate time. You've been in the news a lot lately. You just announced a new an extension with your casino partners there. Also unveiling your 2020 schedule, 13 events. So it's a busy time right now for you.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. So, yeah, things are really good. Things are really busy. We've been on the grind, man. I mean, we've had 6 shows this year. We've sold 5 of them out, and I feel like we've really hit our stride when it comes down to a company. For us, it's like we found that sweet spot where we're doing, you know, 12 shows plus one big charity event a year. So it's been great, man. And you know, to be able to lock in our partnerships with these casinos for the next, you know, 3-4 years. You know, this is solid, man. I mean, and to be able to unveil our full schedule before Memorial Day weekend is something to be said for 2020. And I'll be honest with you, we have our 2021. We're hoping to finish up here before August. Oh, wow. And so that'll be good, man. So then we're talking, you know, a year and a half out. I think if you look at any fighter, what do they want? They want a plan. And you know what? Here's your plan. You know, stick to the plan. And, you know, it's for you to go out there and perform and to succeed. So I think things are really good on our end.
Yeah, I think when we talk about the MMA scene outside of the UFC and Bellator, we really don't hear promotion saying, hey, here's my schedule for next year. Oh, and by the way, here's my schedule for the year after. It's very unique. When I saw it come across my time, I was like, wow, that's kind of unique of what you guys are doing. You know, one of the guys I wanted to mention to you was Dustin Lampros. I've had a chance to talk to him, trains down at Hard Knocks 365. And I think, unfortunately for him, is he's getting really used to this change of opponent.
I remember
the last time I talked to him prior to his last fight, he had an opponent, and I was promoting the interview like the day of the fight, and he texts me, he's like, hey man, new opponent again. I mean, so for you, I mean, I think that's a credit to you and your team there, that all these changes that Dustin goes through, you're still able to get him opponents.
Well, I can tell you this. I mean, for me, but I also look at it for Rob Doniker, who's our matchmaker. And you know what, man? I mean, Dustin's a tough guy. He's a tough guy. He comes hard to fight. He's not a jiu-jitsu guy that's going to go out there and submit you. He's the guy that's going to go out there and he's going to beat your ass. I mean, so I think that when people get down to it, they're like, you know what? This kid's he's a huge 35er. He gets in there. He scraps. Call him scrappy for a reason. He throws hands. And he's going to bring the fight. And I think that, you know what? That's going to happen right now. You know, I think that we're lucky enough that we'll be able to find some opponents for him before it. So, you know what? I think Dustin's got to keep doing what he's doing. And you know what else he told me that's very unique? He said, I don't know if this is whatever, but at 365, they don't really train for game plan for a fighter. They game plan on what they're going to do. And I think that, you know, that's pretty awesome. And I think that, you know, one of the top gyms in the country, without a doubt, in the world, I should say. And if you look at it, it's really paid off for him making the move. And, you know, understand he's not training for just one fighter. He's training for any fighter. He's focused on himself, and it shows in his fights.
Yeah, he's mentioned that exact point to me as well. And also, you know, he's one of these guys. I mean, of course, you deal with fighters on a day-in, day-out basis. To me, he understands kind of the business side of how he's developing his career as well, which is something that in all my years of interviewing fighters, it's not something you always hear a fighter talking about of like, look, I have to, you know, this is a plan of how I'm building my career.
Well, and I think that's a very good point. If you look at him as fighters, you know what? He's doing a great job at it. This is a business, you know what? And it's like, it's a plan, you know, it's just like for us, we'll start our guys in the amateur ranks, right? We'll start them from the amateur ranks and we'll move them up to the pro ranks. If they win our amateur belt, we sign them to a 3-fight contract to the pros, right? And then they go, they sign a 3-fight contract. They win all three. We'll sign them to another 5-fight contract. So they'll have 8 fights in. If they win 8 in a row and they're dominating fashion, you know, we're probably going to put them up for a title. You know what? If they win our title, they get a 4-fight contract into Bellator, you know? So it's like, hey, here's a plan. Follow your plan and keep doing what you're doing. Keep building your brand. And you know what? We have a company here in Shamrock that, you know, we can keep doing what we're doing as well at the same time. And, you know, and if the fighter can do what he's doing, someone like Dustin, then it's even better.
Yeah, I mean, I look at the Bellator thing, and I mean, as much as we talk about what's going on with PFL, about this being this path, you know the path you're on in PFL, I look for your promotion and say, hey, there's a path to Bellator, and here's the path of how you do it. And I've talked to a lot of your fighters that they mention that all the time. Like, look, I see the path, and I know a Bellator contract can be there. I just got to go out there and perform.
Right. And it's not a 1-fight contract. I mean, it's a 4-fight deal through Bellator. I mean, and you know what? They got to do it. We've had a lot of guys follow the path. Just recently, Bobby Volker followed the path, signed the contract. He's ready to roll, too. So, and with us also, like, as far as the amateur ranks, they can, you know, follow the amateur ranks all the way to the pros. And you can make your way all to the UFC or to Bellator, excuse me. UFC, we've got a lot of guys in UFC right now. Andrew Sanchez, Luis Pena. I mean, that's just off the top of my head. Some guys that have been there that have fought for us. So it's like, look, I mean, it's your choice, but it's also building your brand as well.
Your next event, June 8th, Shamrock FC 319. One of the things that really jumped out to me about your main event between Cody and Ray is both these guys have been on the sidelines. They haven't had, you know, fights in a couple of years. When you're putting that matchup together as part of the thought of, hey, you know what? I don't know what we're going to see out of both of these guys.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know what? It's a fair fight. You know what? Because they said, well, there's going to be cage rust. there's me cage rust for both of them, right? So I mean you can't say, oh, is this gonna be a factor, is that gonna be a factor, is it, you know? So I think with both of them, if we can make matchups like that, both of them are very long, both of them are very, very good strikers, both of them are very slick off their backs, both of them are good fighters as well. So I think that you know what do? We put on exciting fights, man. I mean, you can say what you want, good, bad, or indifferent. I don't think a lot of people are saying bad, but just in general, like, for us, we try to do our best as we can and just put on exciting fights. And I think if you look at this fight, it's a great fight on paper, and it can go either which way.
Hey, this is a sport, but at the end of the day, you're in the entertainment business. You know, you're trying to put on fights
business,
that,
man.
You know, people are not buying tickets, to watch something they're not going to enjoy. I mean, it's sports, but it's entertainment.
It's entertainment. And that's why if you look at it, you get these guys out there that are, 8 or 10 and 0 and they can't get anywhere. Well, you know what? It might be time to look yourself in the mirror and say, listen, I need to put on more exciting fights, But then you got someone like Ben Askren who got there. But you know what? If you can't stop Ben Askren's takedown, it's called mixed martial arts. You know, I mean, he's there for a reason because no one can stop his takedowns. So keep doing what they're doing. And I'm a Ben Askren fan because he says what he's going to do and he does it, executes it. I love it. And his Mizzou guy too, so I'm a little biased.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys. I mean, he's just so dominating. You look like a guy like Khabib. I mean, and there's guys that go through your promotion as well. It's just, when you have that ability to take the fight wherever you want it to go, you're already one up on your opponent.
Whenever, however, whenever I want to do it, I'm going to put you on your back. And that's what he's doing. And so good for Ben Askren. Now, he had a little trouble with Robbie Lawler. I will say that. Yes, would I like to see that rematch? I think we all would. But at the same time, hey, listen, referees do make mistakes. I'm not saying that was a mistake. But at the same time, you know what? Maybe he should have, Robbie should have finished the fight as well. I mean, completely knocked him completely out and keep going. So we'll see. I mean, he was getting choked. You can say what you want. But at the same time, Robbie should have knocked him out on his feet as well. It happens.
Yeah. It's part of the sport, it's something that you have to deal with. Anthony Garrett is also in this fight card, and he's a guy I've had a chance to interview a couple of times. He's one of those guys I've kind of been monitoring his career. How have you seen him develop and now heading this matchup against Jordan?
Let me tell you something. Right now, I think is the best Anthony Garrett has ever looked because he's believing in himself. He's a college football player. He's a big, strong, good-looking kid, extremely marketable. And you know what? And I think that sometimes in the past, he doubted himself a little bit. And I think that right now he believes in himself more than ever. And a confident Anthony Garrett is a scary Anthony Garrett. And I think if you look at him, Jordan Mitchell's been on a little streak himself too. So is he on three fight win streak? I think it is. Mitchell. And you know what? So, hey, when two big heavyweights get in there, you never know what's going to happen.
Another guy on this card, J.W. Kaiser, of course, everyone remembers his fight in Bellator against Jake Hager. He's just gone through an opponent change. But, I mean, do you kind of almost feel like as a promoter, like he's going to be a guy that, hey, people are going to find he's on his card, that maybe they're going to kind of see how's he bounce back?
And listen, his opponent change, he's fighting Chris Beal. Chris Beal is a guy that throws hands, man. I mean, he stands in the middle of the cage and likes to throw him down. So that's a good fight. That is a good fight. J.W. Kaiser, man. Jack Swagger is a Division I wrestler, right? I mean, like, where that fight's going to go. And, J.W. has nothing to hang his head about. I mean, look, at the end of the day, he went out there, he fought as hard as he could, and he got beat by a Division I wrestler. It happens. It happens to a lot of us. Right. I mean, so this fight will probably be a stand up war where they're both going to stand there and bang. And that's what we like to put on, is exciting fights, especially big heavyweights like that.
Yeah. And people love the heavyweights no matter what they look like.
We got them, baby. We got them over here. So they're going to stand and bang, hopefully.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it. I want to mention one more thing here. We were talking about, the referee thing. When you were making that transition from a fighter to post-fighting career, was there ever thought of being a referee or a judge for you?
Zero. zero. The referee's got the worst job in the world. It's like an umpire in baseball. You never get noticed until you make the wrong call. Right. Like, as far as a judge, I've judged a lot of fights, back in the when it was almost like 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, when it was like, hey, pick your friend, who's going to be the judge. I mean, it was so crazy chaos back then. It was no holds barred or whatever it may be. I mean, there was nobody was overseeing anything. I did an interview before this and they were asking about, you know, how I got involved. And I was like, man, listen, like back when I started, it was like, it was called, submission fighting. Really, it was like submission fighting or, oh my gosh, my phone will not stop. I'm sorry. Submission fighting, or it was cage fighting, or it was NHB. I mean, it was just, mm-hmm. And so yes, I've judged a few, in the past, and I actually enjoyed judging before I referee. No, thank you.
Yeah. And also I think one of the hard things about being a judge is how the cage is too, or the ring, because there's blind spots. I mean, where, you know, there's times where you're watching a fight, you'll see a judge literally stand up because they've been blocked by something. I'll never forget being in a show. A cage post or a cameraman.
Right.
I've seen that happen.
We all have. and it happens.
And usually the argument you see after that between the judge and the camera guy and the producer is usually some very good stuff.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
But of course, I look forward to seeing that next show. Of course, I know you got another event coming up in July as well. So, Jesse, as always, appreciate time. Of course, for everything Shamrock related, where can people find information out?
ShamrockFC.com is our website. You can find us on Facebook with ShamrockFC as well. And please, we appreciate all your support and everybody's support. Just keep doing what we're doing here. You know, it'll be 21 years here in July. Hopefully, we can go another 20.
Join me now here on the MMA Report. A man fights on Friday night. LFA 68 back on the program. Bobby Lee, another matchup. Looks to get another win here in LFA. Bobby, man, I appreciate time. It is fight week, man. What's kind of the mindset right now?
Oh, I feel good. I feel healthy. I feel ready to compete. And this guy, Makan Mendonca, it's a tall task. He's a big guy. I'm giving up 5 inches of height, 6 inches of reach, but I just had a good kickboxing session, and what we're working on is exactly what the game plan is, and that's get in his face and throw heavy hands.
Of course, trained there by Brock Larson, and listened to Tyson Chartier's podcast when he had Brock on. He told these stories of Brock not being the greatest driver. Now, do you have any Brock Larson bad driving experiences?
Well, I wouldn't say bad. I mean, we're alive. We're both okay. But, you know, he drives like he's been driving on country roads his whole life. He'll go over curbs, no problem. He's not the scariest driver, but you don't fall asleep when he's driving.
I think that's pretty much the way Tyson described it. You better stay awake because you never know what might happen.
You're gripping the handle the whole time.
One of the things that you had mentioned recently on social media was trusting and enjoying the process. Obviously, you've had a lot of experience in this game. Is that just something as you've kind of – would you almost say that's a veteran-type mindset of trusting and enjoying the process?
Yeah. I'd like to think that I'm approaching this game with my head on my shoulders, and I'm going to exit the game with my head on my shoulders. And one of the things that I've learned, especially after a loss, is that it's not all about wins and losses. If I plan on having 100 fights in my career, there's no way I'm getting out with 100 wins. There's a lot of people focus on like the biggest name in the sport, probably in or sports, and that's Mayweather, Floyd Mayweather. What's his record? 50-0, mm-hmm. Perfect action, 50-0. Well, if you're in MMA, and unless you're Habib, you're going to get beat. Habib's the one example I can think of someone who is unbeaten. The other one could be John Jones, but he's got several asterisks next to his name. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you compete against the best in the world, and if you don't handpick your opponents, you're going to lose. And it's about how you conduct yourself day to day. And I get this chance to coach now. I get to coach kickboxing classes, and every now I get to coach an MMA practice, and it's a lot more about how you you live your life day to day. And fighting only makes up like a tenth of a percent of all the days of my life. So if I'm only on for fight day, there's a whole lot of days of the year that I'm missing.
In terms of coaching other people, whether it's a kickboxing class or an MMA class, how does that make you a better fighter?
Well, you get to see 20, 30 different people doing the technique. I mean, if you say jab, cross, hook, low kick, and that's the combination, and you might see 30 different variations of that in one class, and like the different body types and the different mindsets. Someone who's been doing it for a while, you can take things from what they're doing, and you could see, oh, this is how it's meant to be done. This is what I should be doing during practice. And then if someone's struggling, you can then change the next round to adjust to their level. And I coach adult classes. I don't coach kids classes anymore, but like, I have the utmost respect for people that can coach kids classes. The level of patience that they have is amazing. I'll get back to coaching kids someday, but for now, it's getting adult classes up and moving. And it's cool to see after a 45 minute class or after an hour class, the feeling in the room is lighter. There's a weight taken off their shoulders. They feel good and they can go home and enjoy life after having a long day at work or whatever, but they come in, they hit the bag, and they feel a lot better.
And of course, another matchup for you here in LFA. This has been your home majority of your fights. Have you ever been in LFA or RFA? There's only one other fight that didn't take place in those organizations. As you look at your LFA run heading into this matchup, is there a way you would describe it?
It's a pretty good learning curve. I mean, I started off I went pro earlier than what coach wanted. Brock, he wasn't like super angry at me, mad at me that I only had 5 amateur fights, but he wanted me to have a longer amateur career. I wanted to rush it. I wanted to jump right in. And at 19 years old, when I made my debut, it showed I was pretty green. And I learned a lot from 19 to now 23. So I'm coming up on 4 years into my pro career, and I've been given bigger and better opponents almost every time around. And I've grown up a lot. So the LFA has treated me well, and it's been a super awesome place to compete. I can't even imagine what the difference is between LFA and the UFC. I mean, it's a cage, there's bright lights, you're on TV. All but 2 of my pro fights have been on Access TV. So that's broadcast in the US, but it's also broadcasted in Brazil. So pretty much only 2 of my pro fights have not been internationally broadcasted. So I'm used to fighting now in front of a world audience. Obviously the UFC's audience is bigger, but I don't think it'll be that different. I mean, the level of opponent might be different, but I feel like I'm ready to make that jump. And that's the whole theme of this week, is that I'm going to go out, knock Makon out. That's the plan. He's going to hit the ground like a sack of potatoes. And then I'll get on the mic, and there's one guy I want to talk to. And that's one guy I want to get my message out to. And that's Mick Maynard. Pretty sure he's the matchmaker for the lightweight, welterweight divisions. I'm not going to compete at 170 in the UFC, but if it's short notice, we'll see. But I can make 155, and my weight was lower for this fight than it was for my last fight. My last fight was at 165, and I'm lighter now than I was for 165, and this is at 170, so I get an extra 5 pounds to breathe. It's not going to be a weight cut. It's what I walk around at. It's like 5 pounds.
You know, you mentioned about your opponent here, Makon. He got off to a rough start in LFA. He dropped 3 in a row, but he is coming off that win. Do you pay more attention to those fights he lost as opposed to his most recent fight? Or is it more about, hey, let me see the most recent fight because that's going to be more of a version I'm going to face?
To be honest, I have not seen his most recent fight. I don't think it's on YouTube. You just search his name on YouTube, and his knockout losses come up. His most recent one doesn't come up. I have not seen his most recent look, but I can't imagine it's going to be too different from the rest of his career. And what I get from watching him fight is that he's a big kicker. He likes to throw kicks, and he's got that Taekwondo Muay Thai background. And if he came out and was shooting hard punches into a takedown, well, that would be a little shocking to me, but that's my fight. I will happily engage in a boxing wrestling type match. It's trying to go kick for kick with him is where I'll go and get in trouble. So guess what I'm not going to do is try to go kick for kick with him. He's got the reach. He's got the height. All that goes out the window when you're forehead to forehead, chest to chest. It's I'm no Randy Couture, but I do believe I can get in his face and make it an ugly fight.
When the fight starts, you mentioned about how he's got the size advantage in this matchup. Is there something particular that you're trying to look at immediately from him? Of, you know, maybe is it how he's standing? You know, what kind of style he comes out? Is there something particular you're looking for?
I was talking to my striking coach about this, and he wants me to be patient and to take the first minute, maybe even 2 minutes, to just read the fight. And like, that's not. I have not done that in the past. In the past, I've treated it kind of like opening kickoff, where as soon as the ref says fight, it's the most dynamic. The opening kickoff is the most dynamic play in all of sports. Mm-hmm. The opening 10 seconds of MMA can be the craziest 10 seconds you've ever seen. With this matchup, my coach really wants me to kind of sit back outside of range and to see if we can get him to throw that really long kick and to measure it, to see how long his weapon is. And then getting him to swing and miss, And then on the second or third or maybe even the fourth time of him swinging and missing, then jumping on him. So he talked about like samurai, the length of their sword coming out. Sometimes they'd have a longer sheath than their sword is. So their opponent sees this really long sheath and they think that they have like a really long time to draw the sword out, when really it's a shorter sword and the weapon gets out quicker. So we'll have to see how long his weapon is before we go in and attack.
You mentioned about it's about sending a statement to the UFC matchmakers. And, you know, obviously we've seen some, you know, interesting moves by the UFC over the past couple of days with, you know, really putting an emphasis on the entertainment aspect of this, of going out
there. You're talking about Theodoro getting cut or whatever it means, the correct. Wavy hair guy.
Yeah, yeah.
The ring card boy.
And also, you know, Justin Wills apparently got cut as well, where, you know, they have a fighting style that may not be the most fan friendly. Is that something that as a fighter you take note of sitting there saying, you know what, I've got to push the pace because that's ultimately what's going to kind of get me a step up or maybe someone else?
I hear what you're saying. The UFC is losing its grip as the only MMA organization in the world. Like, you talk to people who do not understand MMA, they call it UFC fighting. That's still the world we live in. But to be honest, Bellator, PFL, ONE, all these other organizations are gaining a lot of steam, and they're becoming a lot more. It makes more sense to go to these organizations than it did 5 years ago. They have more money. They have a better crop of fighters. So every fighter, I would like to think that every fighter's dream is to go to the UFC and win a UFC world championship. That's still the gold standard. It's the UFC's Olympics. Excuse me. It's MMA's Olympics. There's nothing higher than the UFC champion. I would take the UFC champion over any other champion of any other organization any day of the week. But it's changing. And you can see that when who just went over to Bellator and lost? Was it anyways, you know the level of Bellator has risen dramatically over the last couple of years. They've got this welterweight Grand Prix that's very, very interesting. Who just knocked out Michael Venom Page? Was it
Douglas
Lima? Douglas Lima. Douglas Lima can compete with any 70-pounder on the world, on the planet. He's a UFC caliber fighter. So the UFC is not the only place in the world to go. That's what the dream's been. So like with the UFC now making these weird decisions of they're cutting guys who are boring, the John Fitch type cut. If you're not exciting, we're going to cut you. I don't know much about Theodoro's career, but I heard he had like one boring loss and boom, he's gone. I have a teammate, Tony Martin. He lost like 3 out of 4 of his first UFC fights, but they were all like, they're all short notice. He was doing the company a favor by taking the fight. They gave him they gave him another shot. They gave him a chance and he won. So he's still around, and now he's on this like, I think 4, maybe 5 fight UFC run. Yeah. Now he's fighting Dean Maia. So he got that chance to fight again after 3 losses, and not a lot of guys get that. But now he's come back and he's got these knockout wins. He's got a head kick knockout win over Ryan LaFerre, and it's just I talk about it all the time with my coaches. Of like, I was asked recently, "Do you fight angry? Are you angry at your opponent?" Not really. No, I'm just a competitor. You got the one side of the mindset where you're stoic. You're Fedor Emelianenko. There's no expression on your face. And then on the other side of things is the Nate Diaz's of the world, where it's like, this motherfucker's coming to take food off my table. And I'm right in the middle. Like, I understand that if I lose, it's not good for my career. I don't want to lose. I absolutely don't. But I get that it's a sport. So I'm in between. I'm in the middle. I don't want to be talking shit. It's just, let me compete. Just let the fighting do the speaking for me. And I'm going to do that Friday night. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to fight to the best of my ability. And what I expect is a first round knockout, dropping this guy, and then getting on the mic and saying, "Hey, Mick Maynard, I can make 155. Give me that chance. Maybe I get on my knees and beg for it, like George St. Pierre begging for the UFC world title." I do see why ONE FC is gaining so much traction. It's martial arts. It's about respect. It's about integrity. And that's one of the reasons why Cowboy Cerrone is doing so awesome. He's not fighting out of, it's not anger. It's just, he wants to be the best he can be, and he wants to win that world championship.
And of course, we get to see your fight come up here on Friday night, LFA 68. Bobby, as always, appreciate the time. Of course, let me know if you can find you on social media. Of course, those sponsors that are helping out.
Yeah. Bobby Lee MMA on Instagram and Twitter. And, I just got to thank my teammates here at Start. I think you can see the banner. I don't know if it's backwards for you guys to see, but the Start BJJ Academy in St. Cloud, and then the Seller Kickboxing Academy in St. Anthony. My teammates, the guys who are in the gym with me twice a day every day, those guys mean the world to me. I got to thank my coaches, Brock Larson, Chris Cycone, and Ben Locken. Ben Locken, I started working with him on conditioning again, and you'll see it Friday night. I've got some extra pop on my shots.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, it's kind of his second amateur fight coming up here. Valor Fighting Challenge 60, Friday night, June the 7th. It is Parker Wadman. Parker, I appreciate time. I did say the last name correct, right?
Absolutely. I get a lot of Wadman or a bunch of different variations, but you got it per first time. Thank you.
Usually I try to ask that question before we start going.
No worries.
But it's all good. So you made your amateur debut earlier on this month at Valor FC 58. So, you know, in terms of, we know that was your first amateur fight, but when did you actually kind of start mixed martial arts training?
Mixed martial arts training specifically, I probably started, must have been November or December of last year. But I've been training a lot of different martial arts separately for a long time. So when I came into the gym over at KMAA, and they do a fantastic job of kind of blending everything together, I already had a lot of the skills from different things. And they're, a lot of what they're doing is showing me, hey, like, you know how to wrestle a little bit, you know how to do this a little bit. So let's try and put it together and make a little bit of a better way to do it.
Now, did you wrestle growing up?
Yes, I wrestled down in Florida at the best wrestling team ever, which is Riverview High School wrestling team. I got to give a big shout out to my coach, Willie Sargable, who's an amazing guy, an amazing coach. He's not the head coach there anymore, but he's still a big part of that program. It was a huge part of me growing up. I only wrestled through high school, freshman to senior, but in Florida, it's a really, really big deal. We're about 10 miles from Brandon High School, which is a really, really high ranked school. So, you know, it kind of brings up the whole competition for everybody. And wrestling, you know, I did Taekwondo before that, but wrestling was really where I was getting into competition and was like, wow, like this is serious. And it was a huge, huge effect on me for sure.
I live in Tampa, so I'm very I am very familiar with what Brand High School Wrestling is. I think anyone who has gone to school here, you know about the credentials of Brand High School.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So they really bring up the competition for everybody. You know, I didn't go to Brandon. I was not, you know, scouted or anything like that for wrestling. I'm not a superstar out there, but it was a big effect on me, and I do love to wrestle, so...
Now, when you actually came into a mixed martial arts gym and you kind of started blending everything together, was it immediate love? Like, hey, man, this is something I want to do, or did it take some time?
You know, so I teach martial arts. I teach Krav Maga and Muay Thai for self-defense mostly. And when I went into it, it was more of like, hey, I need a little bit more challenge. I need something to get me up, get me trained and all that kind of stuff. And when I did start to get into it, and I didn't think I'd be able to compete, I was like, they're going to be like, you know, you teach whatever, but you suck and all that stuff. But so they started to really, you know, teach me all the stuff, and I just fell in love with it. Like, I'll be there as much as possible. Like, it's a lot of fun. And then just having the competition element really just, like, I wake up with rocket fuel in my veins every day. Just get up and let's train. Let's go. Let's get to the next fight. I'm just so excited about it. So I really, you know, as soon as I started to really get to fight and really get to kind of get into it and have some good sparring partners, I was all about it. Like, there's nothing else I want to do.
And your amateur debut, it couldn't go any better.
It was a lucky, you know, bit. You know, it was 16 seconds long. You know, for me, I would almost feel like this coming fight is going to be my first fight, because that just, it was just like, I was all amped up. I was getting in the cage and then bang, it's done. So I just, you know, I'm really, really excited to have a tougher opponent and to have someone to really go in there and see, you know, what do I need to work on and get in there and be like, all right, like this, you know, this is the real deal this time. So I think that this guy's going to be a lot tougher, which is great for me because I'm here to learn. I'm here to get better. I mean, yeah, they say amateur is all about practice, and that's what I want. I want to be here to get in there and see what I need to work on.
And I've talked to so many fighters who have taken that amateur route. They haven't gone straight to pro. And they said it's about getting that mat time in, getting that cage, getting that ring time in to, you know, get yourself ready when you do turn professional. I mean, you know, some fighters say, you know, with the win-loss, you know, hey, yeah, of course you want to go out there and win, but it's about getting that experience. Is your view on it more about this is about getting experience than anything else?
For me, yeah. I think, you know, I heard a commentator say it, you know, amateur is really just practice. And for me, it is about getting experience. It's about establishing, you know, what works for me personally, because everyone's going to have a different style. And it's about, you know, going out and learning, getting better. You know, I'm going to be a lifelong martial artist either way. You know, if I make it big one day, if I go pro, if that's all that stuff, that's amazing to me. But I just want to go out there and learn and get better and push myself to be my best. That's what my whole, you know, since I started martial arts, it's always been about, you know, pushing yourself to be your best. Winning is awesome. I want to win, and I'm going to go out there and, you know, go as hard as I possibly can to win. But, you know, in the end, to me, it's about improvement.
How do you think Alan's going to push you and help raise your level?
Well, I think he's going to fight. That's good. I think it's going to be, you know, probably maybe go the distance or at least push a little bit. I've only seen one of his fights. It looks like he's got decent cardio, which is really good because I like to push the pace. I like to put some pressure on people. I think that it looks like he wrestled before. You know, I don't know, you know, him personally. I don't know anything about his training, but it looks like he's got a little bit of wrestling skills. So, and I saw, you know, he doesn't have video of his first two fights, but he did TKO a couple people. So yeah, I think he's gonna push me. He seems to be pretty aggressive in the cage, which is good. And, you know, just kind of see how I react to that pressure and see if I can implement my game plan. I have a lot of success in the gym, but, you know, when you get in the cage, that might not be the same. So we'll find out.
When you're taking on somebody that, you know, look, you don't necessarily have video footage to see how they do things, how they react to things, what are you looking for as a fight starts? Is it about how do they, is it their stance or, you know, and they always talk about that feeling out process. Mm-hmm. Like for you, is it about, hey, I'm looking at a stance, you know, orthodox, southpaw, what's kind of going through your mind as you're trying to feel them out?
Always, always, always am I going to go orthodox or southpaw first. That's first, because that's going to just have so much to deal with how I'm going to react to the person in general. Past that, a lot of the time, it's more about their footwork. Are they coming to me? Or are they moving away from me? Do they want to stay on the cage? Or are they coming right out to me and after me? because that's really going to change, or are they kind of staying in that middle range? A lot of the time, that's going to be a big difference on how I am going to attack, how I'm going to push forwards, how I'm going to do all that stuff. And then from there, their hand positioning is really important. Like, are their elbows big and flared out so I can hit towards the body? Are they doing a really good job covering up their head, but they can't defend a shot? You know, that kind of stuff is just going to come into play really fast. And that's stuff, you know, a lot of people drop their left hand, so I'm looking for overhands, or, you know, all those little things that, you know, you don't really think about, but you notice, and you just try and implement them. Of course, I've got some really experienced coaches that will be able to, you know, tell me way better than I could ever think. And, hey, Parker, you know, he's doing this, he's doing that. So I have full confidence in them as well to help me out with that.
One thing you didn't mention, but I got to imagine as part of this equation too, is trying to figure out the range of where you need to be at to nail him you know, to get out of his range as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, he's a little taller than I am, so that's, you know, that's going to be part of it. But that's something I just really naturally come to. I did a lot of Taekwondo when I was a kid, and that's such a huge part of that art is really finding that outside inside range, because you're always, you know, you don't get to throw these big long combinations. It's a lot of these one-off kicks, so you're always kind of measuring up that range, looking for that footwork, looking for that kind of stuff. So that's something that I really, you know, I feel like I come to it naturally. Maybe I don't know, but yeah.
I was going through your Facebook. It appears the nickname is the Viking.
Yes. Yes.
How did you get the nickname?
So, I do Krav and kickboxing, and I've been doing it for a while. And, there's a guy named Ernie Kirk, who's a Krav Maga, trainer. And I get everywhere early. I like to be early. I like to get warmed up, all that stuff, kind of get myself prepared for everything. So, I'm working out and just getting warmed up, all that stuff. And I used to have a man bun and the shave, all that stuff. So if you ever watch the show Vikings, I look just like one of them, you know? So, he doesn't know anybody's name, cause he's coming in for a seminar. And he pulls me out of the crowd and says, "You sweaty Viking." And he pulls me up. And my jiu-jitsu coach, Boca, he was there when he said that, right? So he calls me Viking for the whole weekend, Ernie Kirk, and then he leaves. And then my jiu-jitsu coach keeps on calling me Viking because he's, you know, he's got the thick Brazilian accent. So Viking over this way, all this stuff. So, but yeah, it just kind of stuck. And so I figured I'd roll with it. My family is from, you know, those kind of places. And we always kind of talked about what else being Vikings, but that wasn't really me. It was more the Ernie Kirk. And then, my jiu-jitsu coach kind of stuck with it.
You mentioned about martial arts has been a part of your life, your entire life. So I got to imagine, even when you told your family, "I'm gonna start taking amateur mixed martial arts fights," that they were probably on board.
I was really surprised. I thought I was going to get resistance from everybody. I thought it was going to be, "Dude, you're going to get brain damage. You have a good job. You know, you're smart enough to make a living. You know, you don't need to go out there," all this stuff. And I went, I talked to my parents. I went and talked to my boss, all this stuff. And they all were like, "Yeah, go out there and get it, dude, get some." And I was blown away. I really was. I was expecting, you know, so much resistance from everybody. And really the person that pushed me to go out and get into a gym and try it was my girlfriend, my current girlfriend, Danielle, who's awesome and just like really, you know, pushed me to be like, "Hey, like, I know," because when I first started, I was really like, you know, "I think I'm okay, but I don't think I'd be able to compete," all that stuff. She's like, "Dude, you can do that. Like, come on, just go get in a gym, jump in a gym somewhere and see if they want you to do it." And she was a huge reason that I'm competing now. So it's awesome. And then she's like number one fan you couldn't believe. Like, you know, to the nth degree. So I can't say enough about her.
You mentioned about Knoxville Mixed Martial Arts. I've had the privilege to be there. Was there a couple of months ago. Of course, I think from the national MMA scene, when we think Knoxville Mixed Martial Arts, I mean, I think the first name that probably comes to people's mind is Ovin St. Preux. Now, for me, the name that comes to mind is Eric Turner, obviously, the head coach there. Has there been advice or something you have heard Eric say to another fighter that has really stuck with you and is something that you think about kind of on a day in, day out basis of how you evolve as a martial artist?
Yeah, there's a piece of advice that I got there that I literally just ran through it for an entire week. And it was, you know, do what you're good at. And it's not that you shouldn't improve on the other things, but, you know, in my background, you know, all this stuff that I've done before, a lot of people will come in and try to learn everything and get good at something that's not their big thing that they're really good at. And you need to learn how to defend everything. And you do need to learn how to strike. And you do need to learn how to wrestle and do all these different things. But also, if you're really good at something, build a game around that, you know. And that's something that when I started to really implement that, I started to have a lot of success. You know, I'm not a super high level wrestler, but I do love to wrestle. I'm not a super high level, you know, boxer, but I like to box and I try to mix them together and do well at that. And sometimes I have good success with it. So they really push you to learn everything, but of course, know where you're going to be best.
And of course, we got this matchup here just under a little more than a week away from this one. I'm guessing you're chomping at the bit to get ready. I mean, what is the next week like for you? I mean, is it just kind of those final preparations and maybe more the mental side of the fight?
Yeah, I do a lot of mental work. You know, I feel like I compete best when I'm calm. I've tried to get in there and be angry at my opponent, and a lot of the time it just doesn't work out for me. I just don't make the best decisions. So for me, I go to a lot of my support systems, which is just, you know, going to my family. Hey, you're gonna love me no matter what, right? You know, I can go out there and get my butt kicked, but you know, we're still good. And you know, of course, yeah. And then you know, just making sure that my body's really, really ready. I'm gonna do, you know, good weight cut. I'm really big on healthy weight cutting since I did so much unhealthy weight cutting in high school. I really had some bad experiences, not bad experiences, but just your performance gets absolutely tanked when you just do bad weight cuts, you know, when you're just not doing it the right way. So I've really put in the time and the research to do my best weight cuts and to make sure that I'm keeping it healthy, make it so that I can perform as best as possible. And yeah, for the next week, it's just keeping focused, you know, getting good drills in, getting good partners in without getting injured, and, you know, making sure that my body's ready, my weight cut's ready, I'm in the range where I need to be already. So it's not going to be a lot, it's just maintaining, and then drop the water. So that's it.
Yeah, I mean, we hear that so often. I know one of your teammates there at KMA, Jason King, had actually gone out to California to get some more education. I mean, since you've been weight cutting, I mean, I guess you could almost say all of your life,
yeah.
In terms of competition, I mean, like, is for you, is it as much about knowing your body and how your body reacts to things, of kind of knowing how to, from a healthy aspect, to cut down to the contracted weight?
I think that the biggest thing is the discipline in between or before your fight. I think that there's so many guys that are willing to cut out a lot of their weight with the water, which is nice because you don't have to be disciplined beforehand. You know, like if you are going to say, okay, I can cut 13 pounds of water. I mean, you can, and that's fine and go for it. And if you really are fit and you're going to make, like, if I wanted to go 145, which would be, you know, a big cut for me, you know, I would need to get really, really low, and then I'd still have to cut 13 pounds, 15 pounds of water. But I try to stay super disciplined, you know, all the time. For the month before the fight, I'm on a good, strict diet, get my body fat percentage as low as I can while staying hydrated. And then, you know, following a really good weight cutting program where you water load and you understand how to make it so that your body will lose that weight and rehydrate as easy as possible. A small amount of dehydration puts a big strain on the body when you're going to compete. When your body, you know, wants water when you're competing, you're not going to do your best. So I really just try to do it as smart as possible. It sucks. Everyone knows weight cutting sucks, you know, but I think that one thing I learned through wrestling is just embrace the suck, do it the right way, and you'll still be able to compete at your best. And that's really important to me.
And of course, this all goes down. Valor Fighting Challenge 60, Friday night, June 7th. Of course, from the Cotton Eye Joe there in Knoxville. Also on Flow Combat as well. Parker, man, I really appreciate the time. Great having a chance to talk to you for the first time. Of course, let me know they can follow you out on social media and anyone that's helping you out for this one.
Sure. Of course, guys, if anybody on here is interested in training in mixed martial arts, I want to give a huge shout out to my gym, which is KMAA. They do a wonderful job. I got to give a huge shout out to Coach Joey and Coach Eric. They're just fantastic people. And Shamir for running the whole show, especially promoting for Valor. They all do an amazing job out there. If you want to follow me, I do have a Facebook page that is Parker the Viking Wadman. It's just a Facebook MMA page, so you can follow me there. I'm on Instagram at Wildman_Wadman. Took a couple tries there. And I do have t-shirts out. If you want to grab a t-shirt, there's a link. It's on Teespring. And it's just a cool t-shirt that I designed myself. And if you want to help support me as a fighter, or you want to grab a ticket for the upcoming Valor 60, just let me know and I'll get you all set up.
And there was my conversations with Calvin Kattar, Jesse Finney, Bobby Lee, and Parker Wadman. Appreciate all four of those men coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. It was interesting talking to Bobby Lee about what's going on with the UFC, with what happened with the cuts there of Elias Theodoro. Also, Jesse Finney, great stuff for him, talking about the kind of the entertainment side of the sport. In fact, the guy put on entertaining fights, and of course, great stuff there from Calvin Kattar, who fights next week, and Parker Wadman, who'll be fighting for Valor Fighting Challenge next week up in Knoxville, Tennessee. But Daniel, last week on the show, we did our top five valuable non-UFC fighters, and this week we're going to draft our rival UFC promotion. Now, the key part of this is they cannot be current UFC fighters, but we're going to draft five guys. We're going to go back and forth. I'm going to, since Daniel, you're the young man here, I'm going to give you the first pick.
Wow, how noble, how confident you are that your team is going to kick my team's ass, Jason. Okay, I'll get the first pick as I get the rival UFC promotion. I tell you what, I'm going to keep it simple, stupid. The KISS, that's my philosophy to life. Keep it simple, stupid. I look at the roster of fighters available. I think there's one fighter who's clearly the best fighter in the world. And there's one fighter who's the most marketable fighter in the world. And I'm going to go with the best fighter in the world. I'm going to go with Demetrius Johnson as my first overall pick, Jason.
All right. I am glad that he was definitely on my list of fighters to contend. I'm glad you didn't take my first pick.
I know. Go for it. Who are you taking?
Oh, Cale Harrison. I think when you when I was putting together my list of fighters, I was thinking about the history of the fighter, what they have accomplished in MMA, but also about what is the future like. And you look at Cale Harrison, and John Gruden had this great comment years ago when he was a coach of the Buccaneers, where he said, "The future's so bright, I got to wear shades." And about that is a great way to describe Cale Harrison, because I think the ceiling for her is potentially to be the greatest women's fighter of all time. And I think we're going to find out a lot about her whenever the potential matchup with Sarah Kaufman happens. I'm sure if PFL in their dream scenario, that'll be the final of this year on New Year's Eve. But to me, it's about looking at the future, and that's why Kayla was at the top of my list.
No, and I feel like the first overall pick largely dictates our rosters here. It was tough. I felt like I made a mistake going to Demetrius, but your shows may have a little more eyeballs, Jason. But I'm just going my gut, and my gut tells me I'm gonna have to make a potential mistake. I mean, this could be an NBA draft situation, where the number two overall pick was the smart money pick, Jason. But I can't hate on that, because obviously she was the other fighter I considered, right? Like, Cale Harrison is a fighter you can build the promotion around, because she gets people to the TV set or the computer. I just had to go with Mighty Mouse.
So who's your number two pick?
God, now that I went with Mighty Mouse, now that you went with Cale Harrison, I feel pressured to succumb to the media, and get a fighter that's going to bring eyeballs to, like guaranteed. I'm looking at a baby slice, not really, but I'm looking at that. But I'm going to say screw you, and I'm going to just I'm going to get the best promotion in terms of talent. And you know what? I'm going to take a risk. I'm not going to get a name value type fighter. I'm going to get Gegard Mousasi as my second overall pick, Jason.
Interesting. He was, as you were speaking there, I had a thought of where you're going, but Gegard was not someone I thought you're going, but he was definitely on my list. I mean, when you think about just best fighters in all of MMA, no matter where they're fighting, Gegard, is right up there. I mean, can fight at 85, can fight at 205, my guess is, probably fights Ryan Bader for the 205-pound title at some time. Of course, he's got to get through Rafael Lovato, here coming up here in a couple of weeks. But he was definitely on my list. My number two, it comes down to two fighters, and one is about eyeballs, and one really is about kind of a guy that just, to me, if he could put everything together, he could be just tremendous, and that's Aaron Pico. Now being at Jackson Wink, he is a guy that, I mean, look, he takes on tough challenges. Got another tough fight coming up here, you know, next week or 2 weeks from now. But to me, it's, once again, the future is very bright for Aaron Pico. It's just a matter of, can he become, I mean, you love the aggressive Justin Gaethje type style that Aaron Pico has, but somehow if Jackson Wink can kind of rein that in and get him to pick his shots more wisely, I mean, this guy has everything that you think could be a Bellator 145-pound champion.
It's personal now. I'm so angry. I was going to go with Aaron Pico on my second pick, but I'm like, he'll be there at three.
Well, I figured he'd be your third pick, so let me grab him, yeah. And then I'm going to probably get the guy I was going to take it to at three.
Oh, man. So the guy you were going to take at two is a guy. Okay. I'm so angry. God. Oh, I really wanted Aaron Pico on my roster. I thought I was going to kick your ass in this game, Jason. But look at you. You know what? Whatever. I'm going to go with Lemele McFarland as my third overall pick.
Okay.
I look at the way she came down to the cage in Hawaii, and I had goosebumps. I had goosebumps on my goosebumps. It was epic. And I know, I'm gonna get the best marketing team in the world for my promotion. All right, I'm not going to get some UFC crackerjack nonsense. Okay, I'm going to get people who know how to promote people. You know, I'm gonna get my fighters. I'm gonna be modern. I'm gonna put them in like YouTube vlogs, etc. I'm gonna market Aleigh Malay. She's gonna be a star, and that's why she's my third overall pick. What guy? Who are you taking, Jason?
So my third pick is about getting those casual eyeballs to the television set. Mm-hmm. He doesn't got much left in the gas tank. We all know it. But you know what? This guy's fighting. You're tuning in to watch, and that's Fedor Emelianenko.
You going to sign him to a two-fight contract or what?
I'll sign him to a one-fight contract because, he is past his prime. We all know that. But the fact is, when Fedor Emelianenko, you know he's going to fight, you're going to be tuning in on the television set. That's just the reality of it. Because I think when you're talking about making a fictitious roster to challenge the UFC, you got to have fighters that are going to bring eyeballs to the television set.
Yeah, you're right, man. You are totally right. Fedor was on my list, and I think if you have two categories, he's among the top guys available. And in fact, he probably is the top guy available, eyeball drawer. So, I can't hate, and somebody you can really build a first show around. You know, whenever you're booking shows, you can kind of you want that first initial bam. Here we go. And Fedor is absolutely a guy you can put in your main event. Okay. So you have Fedor. Man, there's a lot of talented fighters available, but I'm gonna take a risk here. You picked Aaron Pico. And I want someone long-term who I think might be one of the best fighters in the world. And Pico would have been my pick. Now, there's a lot of people available. But, I tell you what, no. Oh, this is tough, Jason. But I'm going to go with Michael Chandler as my pick. I know he lost to Patricio Pitbull, which I'm screwing up here. Yeah, man. I tell you what, I'll go Michael Chandler. I'll stick in the Michael Chandler business. I know he's coming off the loss to Patricio Pitbull, but prior to that, I've liked what I've seen out of him. I still think he's in his prime. I still think he's one of the premier lightweights. He's someone I feel as though I can market, and I'm going to go with Michael Chandler as my fourth pick, Jason.
That is not who I started. When you started talking, I wrote down a name, and I was like, he's saying AJ McKee.
Yeah, damn it.
With you going, Chandler was on my list. I mean, look, I think in terms of the fighting style, the credentials he has, he's definitely a guy that you would look at putting there. As you know, I'll tell you, I still have a lot of names on my list, and so when I look at my fourth pick, man, I got to go Rory McDonald. I just think when you talk about some of the best fighters in the world. Rory is still up there. You know, we don't know kind of what the future holds for Rory after what happened in his post-fight speech after his last fight. We'll see what happens, you know, here in 2 weeks when he takes on Neiman Gracie in the main event of the Bellator show in NYC. But, I mean, he is a guy that he has name value, and you put Rory McDonald on a fight card, that's going to get people interested.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's – I mean, he's immediately, I think, your best fighter. And not in terms of name value, but he's also someone who I think – like, he's a great mix of, like, sporting versus a fighter people actually know about. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great pick. And yeah, H.G. McKee was the guy I was looking at, but – as I go towards my fifth pick, I mean, I'm going to go off the board of my fifth pick. A guy who I don't think is on either of our lists, and I think it's because we forgot about him. He is my, if you wanted to do this fight with Fedor, you can't do it anymore. He's a guy who gets it. He knows how to promote. He's got a way to my heart because he's a pro wrestler. I'm going to go with Josh Barnett as my fifth pick. I feel like he's one of the top heavyweights in the world, and I think he understands how to market and promote fights. So I'm going to go with Barnett.
Yeah, when I was putting my list together, I was going through the Bellator roster, and in a way I kind of forgot that Barnett had signed with Bellator just because we really haven't heard anything. So, but yeah, I like that pick there. See, now this is where – so I had someone earmarked for number five. But, man, there's two prospects I have on my list, AJ McKee and Tyrell Fortune. I think the sky's the limit for both those guys. But if we're looking at getting someone to rival UFC promotion, I need name value. I need entertaining fighters. Give me Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah. Yeah, you got one hell of a roster, I tell you what. Yeah, Eddie's a name that probably should have gone with him on my fifth pick.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know why the hell I didn't go with it. Yeah, I could have done Alvarez and Chandler.
Yeah, I mean,
the hell, Jason, I'll trade you Barnett for Chandler.
I mean, like you know, I mentioned, like some of the names that were I had written down on my list: AJ McKee, Tyler Fortune, two guys I just mentioned. You know, Chandler, who you picked, Patricio Pitbull, Douglas Lima, Michael Page, Darian Caldwell, and Koji Horiguchi. Of course, Caldwell and Horiguchi are going to fight here in 2 weeks. But I think when I was putting together this listing, I think what it really kind of emphasizes is there's a lot of great talent outside the UFC that just, I think more than anything else, just needs more attention.
Well, and you know what's interesting is I have all those guys on my list, and you could make the case that the best fighter, non-UFC fighter, wasn't on your list and didn't get drafted. And that's Ryan Bader. You could make a case that in terms of pure talent level, he's the best. I mean, I don't know if I would or wouldn't, but he's a name that's still left there. And then the other two names I had that you didn't mention on my list, and you're right, there's a lot of talent. You know, we went 10 deep and you reeled off five or six or seven names. And the other two was Lyoto Machida and Lance Palmer. Those names are also kind of on my list. So, and of course, I think that's a good kind of consensus is that there's a lot of talent here in the old non-UFC and also the names, you know, Chael Sonnen available for commentary if you want them.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing with Ryan Bader is more of do people go out of their way to watch him fight? And I just don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either, and I think it's the answer. Probably when you don't know, the answer is no, right? he's not, but he is definitely a guy who might actually be the top non-UFC fighter pound for pound. He's reeled off seven consecutive wins. I mean, he's just looked unbeatable since leaving the UFC, and more often than not, he goes out there and he does finish the fight in Bellator. So. He is someone who wasn't on either of our rosters, and you could look at as maybe that was a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned about Lance Palmer. Of course, that's a great segue into what happened last week at the PFL event. You know, really, you look at that PFL event, and obviously the highlight of that event was on the prelims of Movlid, Khabibov in his 10-second knockout against Damon Jackson, I was watching live, and I think I literally just went, holy, well, you know what the underwear was. I mean, brutal knockout. One of those knockouts, you're just like, does Damon Jackson ever recover from that? I'm just mentally, you know, of getting past that. I mean, just an unbelievable knockout. But, you know, you did mention, you know, it was kind of a long card to get through with the main card, 5-6 fights going the distance. And, you know, I have this conversation with a lot of people when you talk about PFL and more when you get into the playoff format. The PFL is so set up for wrestlers. And that's where I kind of wonder, is that maybe a reason why the PFL has not gotten more fan interest in it than it has?
Well, I do think if you flip the channel and you watch on, well, I guess you don't flip the channel to ESPN Plus, but if you flip the keyboard or whatever, and you do turn on those back-to-back-to-back fights, the Andre Harrison win over Peter Pettis, the Chris Wade win over Nate Andrews, the Lance Palmer win over Alex Gilpin. The story of those fights was the wrestling. That's why those guys won their takedown. And when you are watching that on ESPN Plus, I mean, that's just not captivating television, unfortunately. And you bring up a good point.
Man, I was watching the fight card live, and I'm not going to lie, it was a struggle for me staying awake.
Yeah, it's hard to watch that and not get distracted, especially when someone can consume this card very quickly. They can, in terms of like on Twitter, Akhmed Aliyev, look at his knockout, a brutal knockout over Carlos Silva on the main card. Luis Laurentino's head kick, he hit Jermaine Kennedy in the head, and it was a big upset. Jermaine Kennedy delayed reaction, as after he got hit by the head, he's like, oh, wait, I'm going down. And then, of course, the Mavlid Khabibov flying knee, which is just – it was pristine and perfect. So, I mean, you could literally consume this card in like a minute if you just use the internet. And then just, oh, I'm sure Andre Harrison, Wade, and Palmer were okay too.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, I think in terms of the Chris Wade, Nate Andrew fight, I like that fight. I thought that was a fight that really, for the people that kind of downplayed Nate Andrews and you know, of who he had fought, he showed that he is at that level. You know, Andre Harrison, you know, look, Andre went out there and does what Andre does. I mean, he utilizes wrestling, and obviously for Peter Pettis to win that fight, he was going to have to stay on the feet. And of course, you know, Lance Palmer, you know, dominating win by him. He just went out there and did what he did. And, you know, and one of the things I kind of wrote down was, you know, the ratings on ESPN2 have been in line with what the PFL got on NBCSN. So PFL 1, which, you know, the week one of this season, that was the main card, was on ESPN2. That got 137,000 viewers. PFL 2, which was the prelims, got 120,000 viewers. Now, if you go back to the playoffs last year on NBCSN, the 3 weeks of playoffs got 135,000, 125,000, and 144,000. And I think heading into this season of PFL, I just thought that we would see a ratings bump. We would see more interest in the PFL, but that's got to be a concern if you're Ray Sefo, that our television ratings are essentially the same.
Yeah, you want to see that bump up. And I think you can tell yourself that it's going to get better for sure, but I do look at this PFL and I just think, damn, I don't know if there's anything that's bringing people to the table other than Kayla Harrison fights, and that just may be the year of the PFL, where maybe they're right. Their best ratings when what's all said and done is Kayla Harrison, and not like they're building up into the playoffs.
Let me ask you this, because I've had this thought process. Is the fact that there are so many foreign fighters that may play a role into why people may not be as interested?
I think it plays a role, but I do think if every fighter was American, the rating would be the same, because it doesn't, if you're American, it helps to an audience, but it's all about the marketability and the stardom of the fighters. I mean, Lance Palmer doesn't draw a lot of eyeballs. He's one of the best fighters in the world. You put him on ONE FC, you put him on a fight card, you're putting on TBS randomly. is not going to draw a whole lot. He hasn't really figured out how to get people to get invested in his fights, even though he's one of the best in the world. So the international flavor doesn't help, because I do think it makes the degree of difficulty harder to get someone like Islam Mamedov over in the American audience, as it would be to get an American over in Russia. But it's not just about the international influx. It's not just about the wrestling. It's just about they haven't found more than one fighter to get people to really latch onto. And that, to me, is the issue.
Yeah, I mean, I just going through the roster, you have 26 Americans on it, and a Russian fighter seem to be around the 15 to 16 range. It's just something I kind of wondered. The
defending champion in the lightweight tournament, Nan Schulte. You know, this is a guy who, he's not American, he's Brazilian, but he's the defending champion.
No one knows who he is.
He's on the prelims.
But I like that decision, because the prelims were on ESPN2, though.
Yeah, I guess you're right, but it's also the defending champion is like a big time honor. Yeah. It's like you're putting it's a tough one, because you're right. The platform is there. It is ESPN2, but it is also the prelims. And it's like, this guy who is our champion is on the prelims. I get what you're saying, though. You want to put on a guy on ESPN2 to get more like so many more people are going to watch on ESPN2 than ESPN+. And it's almost like they're doing it ass backwards, but yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah. You know, it's just kind of one of those things, because obviously, you know, PFL definitely has a, you know, if a fighter is not an English speaker, it is tough kind of booking them interviews. And it's just something I wonder, you know, and I like what PFL is doing, man. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you can have five fights in, you know, 7 month, 6 month period or so and make $1 million. Love it. What I did find interesting was, so their event that is going to be in the middle of July, which the women's featherweights and welterweights will be on it. I found it really interesting that Kayla Harrison is the co-main event and not the main event.
I just find that insane.
When I saw that come across my timeline, I was like, why?
How do you have a meeting like, all right, guys, what are we going to call? Who's our main event here? Greg, what do you think? I think Magomed, Karimov, and Curtis. That's going to sell that poster, that title. Like, what the hell? This is some Conor McGregor isn't in the main event UFC BS here. I mean, this is some galaxy brain overthinking it. What are you doing? Like, Kayla Harrison is this is on ESPN2. Yeah, it makes no sense, Jason. This is an unforced error.
Yeah, when I saw that, I was like, wow, really? She's your biggest name in the promotion? I'm like, okay. I mean, like, I know Chris Curtis well, but I was like, man, I was just like, that move just was baffling to me.
Yeah, it should be, because it's insane. I didn't know this until you literally just told me, but this is like, what do you like, Jason? I am at a loss for words. Like Kayla Harrison is the crown jewel of your promotion, and it's not like Magomed Karimov and Chris Curtis. It's a good fight, but it's a fight is not amazing.
Karimov is a unbelievable fighter, though.
He is, and that's a great way. That's a great fight to put under Harrison, but it's just like,
that guy's legit.
Yeah, I get it. But how many people are going to tune off after the Kayla Harrison fight?
Probably a lot. Because what is it?
And they're not going to see him.
Because I want to say that fight is the week of the MLB All-Star game, which I'm telling you this now, as someone who worked in sports radio for a long time, that week there is nothing going on in sports.
Oh, yeah.
In sports radio, you call it the dog days of July. Because all it is baseball. It's this anticipation for NFL training camps to start, and that's it. There's nothing going on in sports.
That's the week you hear, like, Doug Gottlieb on the Dan Patrick show, because Dan Patrick took the week off.
Oh, God. I'm telling you what. You look, that is the week every major whether it's a local sports talk show or your national talk show, they take that week off because there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, they should do like a documentary about the sports talk radio guys who get their 1 week tryout. They're like, all right, they got nothing to talk about. Because, yeah, those sports talk guys leave them with nothing.
Yeah, we used to do a contest. Steve Dumig, who passed away 2 weeks ago, actually his memorial service is coming up this week. He would take 2 weeks off in July, and these were one of the 2 weeks. And about the week before he went on vacation, he would do tryouts to where a listener could come in and host a 4-hour show while he's on vacation. And it was basically you had a 1-minute tryout, and Daniel, 90% of the people were so awful.
So he would actually let a listener host the show?
Yeah.
Wow.
But your tryout was you call up and you've got 1 minute. Give us your opening minute monologue.
That's crazy. That's smart. But yeah. I could assume more.
And there would be so many people that would win the contest. They would come in and they would just look at myself or Jerry and just say, man, this was a lot harder than I thought.
yeah, it is, man. I think everyone listening to this show is like, I can do this in my sleep. I can talk about LeBron James and the Lakers.
Look, I'll say this. I go, having you as a co-host makes this show so much easier because I have things to bounce something off of. When you're just sitting there talking to yourself, it can be a little tough.
Yeah, Colin Cowherd is probably going to get like checked into a mental institution in like 5 years just because he's had to talk to himself for like 20 plus years. Can you imagine talking to yourself for 3 to 4 hours? You don't even have, yeah. I mean, that's why he brought in like people to talk to him. Like,
it just makes it so much easier. But of course, on Saturday, we do have UFC Stockholm. Early start, 10 a.m. East Coast time for the prelims, 1 p.m. For the main card. And I think, you know, you mentioned about it earlier in the show, it's not a fight card that you would necessarily say is appointment television watching. But you look at the top of this card, it's kind of like, will the next light heavyweight contender please stand up? I know Corey Anderson would probably have something to say about that because, Corey wants a big fight, and I know he put on social media this week. He's, you know, basically, hey, Dom Reyes, are you going to take this fight or what? He's mentioned he'd love to get the winner, Gustafsson Smith or anybody else on this card. But you look at these top three fights, Gustafsson against Smith, your co-main event, Ozdemir against Latifi, and Jimmy Manawa against Radich. You know, in terms of Gustafsson and Anthony Smith, I was watching Dan Hardy's Inside the Octagon where he was breaking down this fight, and I thought he basically, you know, really hit it, you know, on a couple of points. I think one point with this fight is how do both these fighters bounce back, both coming off losses against John Jones, more particularly with Anthony Smith, because, I mean, and Anthony Smith has been very brutally honest about just being utterly disgusted with himself about how he performed in that fight. But to me, Anthony Smith has got to keep this fight on the feet. But as I've pictured how this fight plays out, I just see Gustafsson trying to get the takedown and working for a submission.
Me too. And there's a – look, this is a no-brainer in terms of who you're picking to win this fight. Unless you feel like Anthony Smith is going to be able to catch Gustafsson on the feet, Gustafsson is the biggest favorite in this entire card because he's proven it consistently at a high level. And not only consistently, but he's got a diverse approach to mixed martial arts in terms of he's elite at several aspects. He can kind of react to whatever Anthony Smith brings to the table. So when you look at which of these two is more likely to rebound successfully after a loss to John Jones, well, Alexander Gustafsson has experience doing that. He has done that, and he's got him back to the dance. But, yeah, you talk about a theme for this card, the theme is Rebound City for the light heavyweights. I mean, all but one of these top six light heavyweights on the card are coming off losses. Some of them, three consecutive losses, Ozdemir and Manawa, they desperately need victory. So these are definitely, will a light heavyweight contender please stand up? Absolutely. But first, they got to sit down and get a win under their belts. So, we talk about some fighters getting cut. I mean, hey, Volkan Ozdemir, with the fourth consecutive loss, he might be in trouble. Manoa with a fourth consecutive loss, given that he has so many fights and he's making that money, he could be in trouble. I don't think so, but four losses in a row is just not pretty. It's a lot of red.
I don't think so on either fighter, just because they're fighters to me that, for the most part, I mean, Oldsmere's had, you know, some performances where, you know, you weren't exactly excited by. I mean, the Dom Reyes fight was awful. And even you go back to when he made his UFC debut against OSP, was not a fun fight at all. But I kind of feel like I don't think their heads are completely on the chopping block. I was kind of surprised to see Jimmy Manoa as the underdog. You know, something I want to mention about the main event here with Gustafsson. He is in a really bad position. He needs Thiago Santos to win at beginning of July.
He's definitely not going to get a shot at John Jones as long as John Jones is champion. I mean, this dude's got to win 20 fights in 2 years. Like he's got to. He is in the Joseph Benavidez position, as we call it.
Well, I mean, think about this. If you go back to since September of 2016, this will be the fourth fight for Alexander Gustafsson.
That's insane. But, yeah, wow, that's crazy. Well, the thing is, moving forward, as long as he's not injured, he's going to have plenty of fights available because it is a long, long road back to a light heavyweight title shot. For a guy who's one of the top five light heavyweights in the world, and he's been that for a while, there's really nothing to fight for, nothing to wait for anymore. Yeah, I understood him waiting for title shots that he's earned, but there's no more waiting for Gustafsson. So I do think we're going to see him get about four or five fights in the next 2 years instead of over the last 4 years.
But you know what the problem with him is, though? He has potential to basically just knock off fighters who've never fought John Jones.
Yeah.
You could put him up there against a Dom Reyes, a Corey Anderson, he just knocks him out, or Johnny Walker just knocks him out of contention.
It's like, I feel Johnny Walker, they're stupid.
No, there's
no way that's going to happen. I mean, that would be the dumbest thing since you told me Magomed Markov's fighting over Kayla here. I mean, Johnny Walker, don't feed him to Gustafsson. You know, Jesus.
No, like, I look at it and I say, like, is Alexander Gustafsson the 2019 version of what Joseph Benavidez was at 125 pounds?
Oh, yeah. Totally. If John Jones didn't exist, we'd be talking about UFC Hall of – okay, he is a UFC Hall of Famer because who isn't, right? Like, you put a sliced bread in an octagon, they'll probably make the UFC Hall of Fame. But Gustafsson would be a light heavyweight champion if John Jones didn't exist, just mm-hmm. like Benavidez would if Demetrius Johnson didn't exist. So, yeah. So, you're totally right. That is spot on. I think he's going to go out there. I think he's going to beat Smith. I think he's going to go out there, beat contenders. It's up to the matchmaker to not put him up against guys who could theoretically challenge for John Jones down the line that haven't. Do not make those fights. Gustafsson will likely beat them. He to me, is above and beyond the top light heavyweight on this card. It's not even close among these contenders. I mean, maybe a guy like Alexander Rakic stands out, and I know he's the favorite, but I would still consider it, like, for me personally, an upset for him to dethrone Jimmy Manoa, because Manoa is established and Alexander isn't. So, you know, maybe he'll stand out.
That one, when I was looking at the betting odds last night, that surprised me that he's a 2-1 favorite.
I think that's just a trend you see when you have guys on the downturn like Manoa versus a fighter in Rakic, who just passed every test so far in the UFC. So it did surprise me too, because there's a massive gap in the best win in Rakic's career in the talent level of Jimmy Manoa. But this is one of those Joe Silva-style matchups where everything just starts, you know.
This is my message. Alexander, don't get into a firefight with Jimmy Manoa.
You could find yourself being on the receiving end of a knockout loss. Yeah. And I wouldn't be shocked if that happens at all.
Yeah, I mean, that jumped out to me. You know, I was looking at Alir Latifi against Volkan Ozdemir here. And when you look at Latifi's wins in the UFC, who would you call his best win? Is it OSP? Is it Tyson Pedro?
I would say it's not great. Jason. It's OSP. But for those that don't have his record, like look at these names. You bring up a good point, by the way. Cyril Diabate, Chris Dempsey, Hans Stringer, Sean O'Connell, John Volante, Tyson Pedro, OSP. Wow. Those are his wins.
First four guys you mentioned aren't even in the UFC. And, yeah. Okay, Sean is definitely retired. Diabate, I think, is? I don't know. Maybe he's not.
Yeah, he was really old when he fought then.
Yeah, like, he's got to be retired.
45. Yeah, he's like 45.
But you know, look, I'll be the first one to say I counted Latifi out when he fought OSP, and man, he made me look, you know, completely wrong in that one. You know, I don't, you know, in terms of you know, I'm gonna pick Gustafsson in the main event. In terms of the co-main event, I'd probably go Ozdemir.
Yeah, I was thinking Latifi, but that kind of swung me Ozdemir's way. And then Manuel Rakic, I'll go with Rakic.
Yeah, I think you got to kind of go with Rakic in that one as well, and to see where he goes from there. You know, when you look at the rest of this fight card, I was watching Mark Juan Americani's interview yesterday on Ariel's show, and he talked about how he's taken six amateur boxing fights, you know, since his time away from MMA, taking on Chris Fish Gold. He has been working there with John Kavanaugh and the crew there at SBG. In Ireland, you know, kind of interested to see how he comes back. Christos Yagos, I've had a chance to talk to him multiple occasions. He'll be a part of this this fight card as well. When I kind of look at the rest of this fight card, there's not a lot that jumps off the paper at me. You know, Steve,
I got one name for you.
Okay, go ahead.
Leonardo Santos. I think you're about to mention him.
Yeah, that was the fight. Him against Stevie Ray is probably, in terms of the prelims, that would be the one fight that I would say has my attention a lot. Another,
you know, Leonardo Santos has a win over? Kevin Lee.
Yeah.
In 2015. I mean, this guy hasn't fought since 2016. He had a hand injury the last time they tried to schedule him to fight. If you don't know who Leonardo Santos is, he won the Ultimate Fighter of Brazil 2, but he has a hell of a resume as a Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist. So that fight against Stevie Ray, that to me is the one to watch.
And also has a win against Tony Martin, who's been on an absolute roll since moving up to 170 pounds. Another fighter I'll mention just is, and this is just my guy for me because I've had a chance to talk to him countless times over here, that's Frank Camacho, who's actually been training at Team Oyama, getting ready for this fight against Nick Hine. Yeah, I like Nick Hine in that fight. But yeah, I mean, you've mentioned it. There's not a lot that jumps off to the paper, but you know, if I don't have my nieces on Saturday morning, I'll pop ESPN Plus up on the television and have it on, as because I do find myself during these fight night cards of like, you know what, let's kind of save some chores around the house just in case fights aren't exactly the most exciting.
Yeah, I totally get it, man. Give me some time to clean the dog poop around the house that I keep slipping on. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the card for sure, and we'll break it down. We'll look at who sticks out, because that is the theme I think we usually go with whenever it's a fight card that's not super exciting. Usually we wait till the fight card happens and we're like, damn, you know, Eduardo Santana, she was great, or whoever. So, hey, by the way, yeah, Eduardo Santana, Bia Maliki, a women's featherweight bout, maybe we'll have the next women's featherweight challenger. I mean, the winner of that fight will be a top 10 women's featherweight, and so will the loser.
When it comes to my dog, he's more looking at me going, hey, are we going for a walk or what?
Yeah, my dog knows I don't like exercise. So.
but yeah, that'll be on a Saturday afternoon here in the United States, UFC Stockholm. We'll wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking about two news items. First off, last Wednesday, the Nevada Athletic Commission reduced the suspensions of Akhbar Nurmagomedov and Zubara Tukhugov. And basically, you want to talk about this being just shady commission politics? Yeah, their suspensions were reduced so Khabib could fight September 7th, because Khabib had said he would not fight until his teammates were off suspension. Are you effing kidding me, Daniel? Like, this is just like, once again, this is why no one should say Nevada is a gold standard of commissions.
Yeah, that's say it again. These things really adjusted because the UFC wants Khabib to fight. That is, I mean, that's what we're thinking, allegedly, right? But I mean,
the only reason, and this is the same commission that it, look, I get Dylan Danis is not well liked. They effed over Dylan Danis.
Yeah.
They cost Dylan Danis from fighting in January and February.
I hate it. I work in the news industry. And we go and we talk to officials and we talk to institutions. And I hate it when you see relationships alter the way institutions officiate people. When a relationship can change the way and it becomes unfair, that's what's happening here. And a relationship did just that with an institution.
Ugh, just absolutely despicable. Now, in so if Yoel Romero actually gets a settlement, why is he ever going to fight again?
If Yoel Romero needs a friend, I'm here. Yeah, what's the settlement? He got, what, $27 million awarded to him?
Yeah, right? So at the end of the day, and his management team, first-round management, a lot of this was obviously about clearing his name, the fact of he did not that this was a contaminated supplement. So the supplement company, I believe, was called Gold Star. They're based in New Jersey. So in New Jersey, if it's due to fraud, the settlement is times three, which made it $27 million. You know, being awarded a settlement and actually getting a settlement sometimes can be two different things. But kudos to Yoel Romero for fighting this and proving his innocence. And if somehow he sees $27 million from this settlement, well, no reason to fight anymore.
Yeah, there's no way that
you might be at this point one of the richest MMA fighters, not named Conor McGregor.
Yeah, yeah, that headline jumps out to you. It's like, holy smokes! But yeah, he's probably not going to get
good for him, man. Good for him.
Yeah, yeah, you get his innocence. You know, like Ronald Reagan. Who do I see to get my reputation back? Yeah, good job, Yoel. Congratulations.
Of course, there is plenty of MMA going on this weekend. Got CES on Friday, LFA on Friday, UFC on Saturday. Sunday morning, we've got Ryzen 16 taking place. So plenty of MMA to take in. Of course, we'll be back next week to recap all things and preview what's UFC 238 next weekend. We've got Marlon Moraes and Henry Cejudo fighting for the 135-pound title. Also, Valentina Shevchenko defending the women's 125-pound title against Jessica Hyde. Cerrone on that card again, taking on Tony Ferguson. So it should be a good weekend of fights. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Sitting Ringside with David Penzer quick fix on Radio Influence.
This week on Sitting Ringside, we welcome WWE Hall of Famer, owner of Clearwater Beach Fitness, a man who has had a 50-plus year career and has done it all, Bushwhacker Luke Williams.
People buy tickets today to watch the cavalcade of superstars to Death Defying Moves.
Right.
Yesterday, which I mean 80s and 70s, they bought tickets to see the babyface beat the bad guy because the bad guy got a lot of heat. Now go back to Muhammad Ali. He talked that shit. He pissed the people off. He bragged. People bought tickets, those pay-per-views those days, and those big ballparks. You know, people don't realize, but in Manila, Truro Manila, and up in Penang, in the southeast, they just ballparked in 80,000. Muhammad Ali drew. Because people wanted to see him, they fly from all over the world to see him get knocked out.
The gates weren't
cash wise weren't the figure of today, of course not. But the crowds were there to see the good guy beat the bad guy.
It's a totally different business. You're 100% right.
The Death Defying Moves, you know.
Yeah.
I've adopted the new style too, mate. You know, I still do the selling and that, but you know, my entrance is a big thing. The Bushwhack entrance, coming through the whole arm swinging, knees up in the air, and going around the ring and smacking hands and doing the woe in the air. You know, that's our entrance, and the people buy it. Yeah, they want to see us come through those curtains on fire, not walk through the curtains. We're baby faces. We've got to show them that we've got fire.
Sitting Ringside with David Penzer can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.